Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, January 22nd, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. We made it. Yeah, I look forward to Friday every week. Actually, this one came way faster than normal. I'm still kind of tail spinning as to what is going on or what day it is, confused with the holiday on Monday. It is 10, count them, 10, yes, 10 degrees, and very sunny here in upstate New York. Actually woke me up bright and early, and I was like, geez, it looks like it's noon outside, but it isn't. It's only 10 a.m. And I see that there is an epic storm brewing down south. I saw right now they're talking about 50 to 60 mile an hour winds and multiple feet of snow in places such as Washington, D.C., which is highly amusing if you know anything about how people react beyond, oh, I don't know, like the Pennsylvania border with snow, at least on this coast here. Anyone in the north knows, you know, 2 feet of snow and 55 miles an hour means get some munchies, find a couple good movies or a warm blankie, and just in some brews, kick back and enjoy the storm. Down south, they kind of freak out. So, not sure. I just looked at the map myself, but looks like it's going to be interesting. So, not sure where I really want to continue on today. We had Lady Pitbull on yesterday. Thank you, Lady Pitbull. It was great to have you on the show for a day. It was fun. I love having company. We talked a lot about Zika. I saw Zika now. They're warning Honduras about Zika virus. We've also questioned whether or not Zika virus is really being caused by mosquitoes or something else. The virus itself is part of the yellow fever virus. Can also see that it is related to malaria as well as dengue. But nowhere in the virus genome and anything that I've read about it is it related directly to encephaly. I did happen to see yesterday in digging in my virus database, there's a couple good ones online, but I found one in particular where you could plug in any virus and gives you all the genome breakouts and you could take a look at symptoms and stuff and ways that it's transmitted. And I can never say it, but you know what I'm talking about. That Chickamauga virus does cause encephalitis. We're still waiting to see if they actually come up with a conclusion as to what is causing this microencephaly. You know, there've been suggestions out there, just like around where there are large amounts of nuclear waste or plutonium, uranium mining, toxic waste. You know, what do we see in Iraq? Iraq, they're using depleted uranium. And up in Washington State, up near where they have all the Hanford, they have all the Manhattan Project waste that's leaking everywhere. In both Iraq and Hanford, they also have issues with encephaly. I don't know if it's microencephaly, but I do know that they definitely have birth defect problems in that region with brain size and head shape. So I don't know. I mean, who knows what's causing it? But this was the first time that they had seen microencephaly being caused by Zika. So, you know, big coincidence there. You can't just draw conclusions out of a hat. I mean, just because A seems to be caused by B, unless you do more testing, there's no way to prove that. And I'm sure that we'll never find out what the real truth is. But here's something even more interesting. So we discussed yesterday about Davos going on and how they announced that Merck has just secured some contract. I don't know. I don't have the story in front of me, but we read it yesterday. Some contract. It was like $5 million to start protecting against Ebola. Yeah, Merck's vaccine out of all of them kind of won. And just as that happens, what do you see? Not one, but two. two brand new cases now of Ebola popping up after they said that they had wiped it all out. It had been eradicated. And I'm going to predict you're going to see a lot more because now we got a contract, baby, and we got a vaccine. They also rolled out, just before this whole Zika thing, they rolled out the vaccine for dengue, and it had not existed before. That was part of all this global warming mosquito disease vaccine-making frenzy. So they came out with a vaccine for dengue. I'm going to guess, just by looking at the virus database, since dengue, malaria, and they've been working on a malaria vaccine for a long time, dengue, malaria, and Zika are all in the same family, that a vaccine would be similar, right? If I understand immunology, even at like a first grade level, if it's the same, the virus from the same family probably has the similar traits when your immune system detects it, which would mean that a traditional vaccine should be pretty similar, right? Wink. And there's been millions, if not billions of dollars poured into development of a vaccine for malaria by people like Mr. Billy Gates. They also worked on genetically modified mosquitoes to help kill the malaria mosquitoes. And some of that was used in places like, let's try and think of some of the poor, unfortunate countries who've had genetically modified mosquitoes released for malaria. I was going to say Australia, but I think that actually was the equine virus in the horses that they did that for. And in Cayman Islands, maybe it was malaria, but then they, I'm not sure if it was malaria or dengue, but you know, they've been doing this for a while now, but it's only been in little test cases. I have a very bad feeling because just as they announced now, oh my God, we have this epidemic of Zika. We looked at a story, and I don't know if we actually read it though, about how all of a sudden now that means that this is a great time of year to start developing and releasing potentially genetically modified mosquitoes that'll directly go against dengue. No, Zika. Brand new. We don't have Zika genetically modified mosquitoes yet, but we will soon. You know, and it's very frightening that they will be able to get away with here very shortly just releasing these hounds out everywhere. And we will be so frightened, even though it's not that big of a deal. But they show pictures of babies with, you know, deformed heads. It's going to make us so afraid that we are just going to let them allow these freaks of nature out into our environment. All right, where do we go from here? So genetic modification in insects. You know, first, we read about the DIY bake your own genetics kit at your kitchen table yesterday for $120. Coming to a hobby store near you soon. Well, after you mess around in the lab with yeast and bacteria, the next thing you mess around with are insects and plants, and we've already done that as a race, and now they're ready to start messing around with humans. And, you know, I have been hearing now on a few shows who don't typically necessarily deal with the kooky before the first cup topics, I've actually been hearing other shows who I tended to feel were more level-headed than me talking about some of the very topics we've been talking about here for multiple years now, becoming takeover of synthetic biology, artificial intelligence, robotics, mad science gone mad, and how horrifying it is. And oh my God, this DARPA brain implant is real. Well, duh, we could have told you that. You know, we've been watching it for a really long time, but I've even been seeing it like in mainstream papers. And you know, this is what happens when you have multiple machines in multiple locations around your house where you connect and you do research. But there's a story upstairs on my notebook that is actually out of Huffington Post, if you can believe it, about the DARPA brain implant and how it's going to be just like the Matrix, and you could plug in and get memories, and it'll help them help sol of course it's for soldiers, help soldiers learn faster, and they could like speed dump an entire manual for some complex hardware into their head in just seconds. And it's very scary because, you know, they're just talking about the basics, like where it was 20 years ago when they started this research. But it's way farther than that now. You know, they're already doing live brain implants of the stimulator, the deep brain stimulation electrode that, you know, causes the production of certain brain chemicals. And that is something that they had already talked about a long time ago for the super soldier. Now they're doing it, of course, going to make you look all nice and happy, and it's going to cure people. And how wonderful is that? As you know, they're putting it into a RoboCop soldier. Uh-oh, everything is going to lock up on me. I'm trying to open some stories here. And it's just typical. It's a typical Friday. Now I lost my train of thought. Those implants were for the typical robo Johnny soldier. And now, of course, we find that we can spin them out to the general public as well. And it'll be more acceptable then when little Johnny goes into the service because you can't afford to pay for college. But hey, they promised you all this college money. If you just go promise to get shot up with the experimental drugs and go overseas for 4 years, hopefully your kid doesn't come back with PTSD. Oh, wait, he did. Well, don't worry about that because you know what? We gave Johnny a brain implant. And I know it's a danger with guns around because, you know, all these people who went over seas and fought in all these unjust wars for us and came back with PTSD now really shouldn't be able to own a gun. We're going to make sure we take care of that, said Obama, through mental health restrictions. PTSD will preclude you from owning a firearm. But, you know, Johnny, you got the implant now, and all we got to do is just push a button, and that's going to release some of that good dopamine drug, that addiction drug, that dangling carrot that works on your brain just like gambling or porn or cocaine. Yes, it's that powerful. And with the push of a button, you know, as soon as your doctor, remember, guys, we were looking at like these mental health apps too. And don't forget that Tommy Unsell, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, is now working for Google, and his whole thing is coming up with mental health apps to diagnose you through your cell phone. As soon as that happens, they'll be able to give you your dose of medication. I don't know, your dose of dopamine. It's time for your dopamine dose, Johnny, so you don't get all violent there and start smashing the TV. You know, I see that as a very probable future. Now, you know, I'm going to warn you guys. I have a whole show lined up here in tabs, and try to click on one of them. And ding, ding, ding. Now all my tabbies are locking. Hey, look at this. My former brother-in-law, maybe he's still my brother-in-law, seems to be kind of not so bright. I see his Facebook post. I thought about doing 23andMe. I swear to God, this is what it says. I thought about doing 23andMe to see what my background is. Oh, go for it. Because I think that's where we're going to kick this off. If even one of these tabs will allow me to click on them. If it'll allow me. You might have to get my raspy singing. If it allows me, let's go. This gets really frustrating, but damn good thing it's Friday. That means I get 2 days off from doing a show. Not off, I never get a day off, but I at least get 2 days off from doing a show. It means no daily research paper to get up and present while I'm half asleep in the morning. And actually, that's a big gift when I don't have to do that 2 days. My brain loves you and me because it can just sit and drool in the morning and have its coffee. Can I please have a story? Please? Please? Okay. It might be 45 minutes of me singing. Oh, Jesus. Here we go. Right, so we're talking about how unsmart, and I could have told you that, my who knows what he is at one point brother-in-law is because he is suggesting, oh, fuck. All my tabs now go to Flash Crash with a little box saying, hey, none of us are responsive. What do you want me to do? Kill it all or just wait? So, you know what, guys? I think we're just going to have to sing. Do we do the angry elephant with trumpets? Or do we do the lonely elephants with oboes? All right. To know thyself, measure thyself. And we're not even going to talk about like DNA. Let's just, for now, let's just talk about the dumbasses wearing Fitbits. To know thyself, measure thyself, why personal data could be a big mistake. I have a device that measures my steps that I take each day and an app that allows my calorie intake, as well as how much water I drink and how many cups of tea I consume. And a smartwatch that notifies me of every little change in my activity level, and it warns me when I sit too much, and a mobile phone that provides me with access to the combined summary of it all. But just yesterday, my insurance company informed me that I can now attach a device to my car that measures and reports on my driving habits, and that'll give me a discount if I put that on my car. Our behaviors are all measured, assessed, and evaluated in increments. I've been telling you guys, we are all part of the Internet of Things. It is coming whether you like it or not, whether you see it or not. Says all little things that we do in the future isn't solely about big data. It's about data in its risky union with big data. It's about your data. And you know, something else that I've been hearing, and I've had these stories queued up for probably a week or two now, but we've talked about them many times. The same people who don't typically talk about the Jules Crazy Science stories have also been talking about now this whole rollout of self-driving cars in the Obama $4 billion investment. Did you see that? There's a $4 billion investment by the federal government to the corporations, which are all the big car companies, developing self-driving cars. And it is being done in the name of safety. Because you know what, Americans? You do not know how to drive safely. So we're going to develop this self-driving technology that's going to keep everybody safe on the roads. And then the insurance companies will be happy. And then we'll be able to track everywhere you go. It'll be good for the environment. You know, think about all of the wasted fuel from you owning your own vehicle. All you got to do is push a button and call that self-driving taxi to come get you. We'll take some cubits out of your paycheck, and that'll be that. It'll be wonderful. If I can play a video later, which I'm going to highly doubt it, the way my machine is acting. I mean, I told you everything is fried now. Skype doesn't even work half the time. But there was a clip Pigmind posted a few days ago from that chick from RT that does the with the music at the beginning that I always skip over that used to sound like Saturday Night Live music, but she changed it now. talking about that $4 trillion giveaway that is about our enslavement. And how many times have I talked about that? Like, my last bastion of freedom is hopping into my car, opening my roof. Trust me, my car's like 12 years old now, but I don't drive it a lot, so it's still in decent shape. But I got a sunroof and I got a good stereo, and those are the two things that matter most to me in my car. I don't care. It doesn't have to be a Lamborghini. I don't even care if it's got a rust spot or two. Actually, my car, knock on wood, still doesn't have any rust, but it's got a couple paint chips that I can see are starting to turn a little orange, especially here in upstate New York winters with all the salt and crap. But gotta say, it's lasted pretty well all this time, my little Focus. But I got a sunroof and I got a stereo that kicks ass. There's a 6 CD changer in there. And when I go, if there's a nice sunny weekend and I get sprung for the weekend, mommy gets a weekend break to go see a friend or two, that's the first thing I do is I turn up the music. I get on the highway and I crank it for a couple hours and I take a ride. And it's just so amazing the feeling that that provides. And that is going to be taken away from us. I mean, I knew it. I knew it was. They can't control you when you can move from point A to point B without somebody intervening, without a passport, without something. So this has got to stop. And the day my kid came home and told me that they were getting questions on some little online application their teacher was having them use about what their thoughts were. Now, of course, she hears me talk about this stuff. Don't think I don't talk about this stuff at dinner, too. You know, I drive my family nuts. But I try to put a brake on it. I try because I get the show. That's what the show is for. But, you know, I've talked about this stuff at dinner before. My daughter comes home, and it was last school year, to tell me that, or maybe it was the beginning of this year, to tell me that in some application that they were using, taking a test or doing some sort of training or whatever, a little thing pops up and asks what their thoughts are about the self-driving car and whether or not they would use one. Now, talk about using market research on like fourth graders. And of course, and I'm asking my kid about this. I'm like, oh, really? And she says, yeah. And then they wanted us to answer. I said, what did you put? She says, I told them I wouldn't like it. No, because it could always drive you to the police station. Which, of course, is something that I've probably said at dinner. You know, once you get in and the door's locked behind you, boop, 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 we're taking you. You know, they could do like real-time detection of any substances on your hands. Oh, you touch the doorknob. Look, we see illicit substances. Or, oh, look, it's on your lips. I mean, they've been able to do that for a while with a laser in airports. You know, I'm going to have a big problem here. I tried to get Skype to connect on this computer and it is still spinning. And everyone's coming online showing is offline, though they're really online, and everything is now flash frozen. Sorry, we'll try, we'll try, we'll try, but I don't even think I can scroll now. You know what? Before I get too far, let's see how baked this other computer is. Oh, I can't type. So, okay, I might just have to ramble for an hour. All right, well, let's read at least what's on the screen here. I can't kill all these because that's my whole show. Sorry. Big data is what organizations know about people. It is an amalgamated information, and it's more than that. Big data is what organizations know about everything. Big data is your back-end database. It is the NSA database and the public health records database, your electronic health records, the mental health records. I mean, all this other stuff that they're putting online, correlating, tying to your dossier. Told you, I am certain we all have a dossier now. It's not just red list, blue list. Your 230-point facial recognition, your voice pattern software, your iris scan, your fingerprint, your blood type, your DNA swab, if you were one of the unfortunate few who had been in the hospital and had a child when you were close to 40 and they used that to fang dangle you to give them up DNA and get a DNA test done. All those connecting points are now together in big data. And I think big data probably lives at Google, Amazon, and the NSA. And who knows, the NSA is probably back-end in Google anyway, just like the alphabet agencies are. No, Amazon, I think that's who that was. They had them build a parallel Amazon cloud for one of the alphabets. All right, big data is what organizations know about people. It is amalgamated information about large numbers of people to enable the inference or prediction of future behavior. Hey, ding, ding. We talked about that too. Behavior monitoring and pre-crime. And it is coming to that. They are able to watch your every move now and get your routines. And how many of us break our routine? Because I know I don't. My routine is pretty the same day in, day out. And if my routine gets broken, it throws my whole day out of whack. Yesterday, my routine was kind of broken. And yesterday, it was still 6 o'clock at night. And I still hadn't finished up what I should have finished in the morning because my routine got broken. It's hard for me to recover when that happens, especially when you're trying to juggle a lot of balls, because that routine getting broken causes balls to fall on the floor. But when you break that routine and they're watching you through big data, it usually means that something is afoot and they watch you closer. So anyway, for example, here we go, to assess credit card fraud. Billions of transactions are analyzed across large numbers of customers. And using the insight derived from analytics, credit card companies can then make accurate predictions about when and where fraud will occur. Little data, in contrast, is what we know about ourselves. Yeah, well, so the article says. The Harvard Business Review says that this data is about us, what we buy, what we know, where we go, how we spend our time. We've always had a sense of these things. After all, it's our lives, but thanks to the combination of mobile, social, and cloud technologies, it's easier than ever to gain insight into our own behavior. Yes, and merge it with big data. Think about your personal fitness trackers. Wow, this is really irritating because I'm about to where I gotta scroll and it still won't scroll and I still can't even copy this link. Damn it. Oh, hold on. BigThink.com. If I can just type the URL, jeez. Talk about old school dash data. Here we go. Maybe it'll open over here. Think about all these personal fitness trackers. These devices have the capability to quantify our every waking moment and sleeping moments too. The newest Fitbit, the FitBlaze, measures your heart, your steps, has a built-in GPS. It calculates the quality of your sleep and then syncs wirelessly to 200 plus devices so you can dive into workout summaries, analyze your trends, track your nutrition, and more. That's little data. The granularity of focus is the primary difference between little and big data. Big data looks at large numbers, little data looks at you. HBR, which is the Harvard Business Review, summarizes it this way. Focus. The focus of big data is to advance organizational goals, while little data helps individuals achieve personal goals. See, again, Big Think is a mainstream article, but maybe they're going to talk about it because they're like, yeah, little data and big data, look at how cute it is, but they're not looking at the 50,000-pound elephant in the room, and that is what they are doing with the little data. Visibility. Individuals can't see big data. Little data helps them see better. Control. Big data is controlled by organizations, while little data is controlled by individuals. Companies grant permission for individuals to access big data, while individuals grant permission. Do they really? Because I don't think they do. I've seen some really horrifying stuff lately about lack of privacy in this information about you individually that's getting out that you have no idea. but individuals supposedly have to grant permission to organizations to access little data. Well, how about like your surf history and stuff that you never really granted access to? They just kind of take that under the guise of national security. And that's the rub when big data and little data merge. The whole big risk for abuse arises. Earlier this year, the Federal Trade Commission released a report, Big Data, a Tool for Inclusion or Exclusion. And as a matter of fact, that might be the story that I have up. I have another one that's up and locked. on the risks of how big data poses to low income in underserved populations, big data's role is growing in nearly every area of business. affecting millions of customers in concrete ways. The potential benefits to the customers are significant, but businesses must ensure that their big data does not lead to harmful exclusion or discrimination. And I go, wah, 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 wah. But we've talked about that from another perspective, and that is when they start looking at data and they are able to determine that, oh, I don't know, you have inferior genes. Remember, we talked about all the different things now that they've discovered can cause genetic damage, like, oh, alcohol, or, oh, pizzas on Fridays, or, oh, being stressed out for your job for 20 years. Oh, I just saw childbirth. They have now shown, and I could have told you this, that childbirth causes accelerated aging. They discovered that in animals, and it's the first time they've really been able to show it in humans. But anybody who's been pregnant can tell you, having a kid, it's not just the process of popping one out. It's what happens after for the next 18 years that accelerates the aging. But anyway, yeah, so as they get more and more information about you and, oh, I don't know, 23andMe, dumbass swab, you know, now they know whether or not you got a BRCA gene or a schizophrenia gene or whatever. You think there's going to be a health insurance company? There was still question as to whether or not for insurance companies that it would be legal for them to access your DNA information and make decisions as to whether or not they were going to give you insurance for, I think it was life insurance, based upon that data. I don't think that there was some loophole in the law that they passed where for life insurance companies, it is not crystal cut clear as to whether or not that data should be allowed to be used by them. I mean, if we know that you got some BRCA gene, which means you're going to end up with some sort of major breast cancer or whatever by the time you're 35, what life insurance company would want to insure you for $1 million policy if you know that there's a good gambling chance that within the next 10 or 15 years, you're going to end up with cancer and probably die? None, I would say. So very slippery slope. And that, I could say, would be a big danger to the consumer for little data. Focusing on the use of big data / little data, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, argues that, quote, inaccuracies and biases within the content may lead to, quote, detrimental effects for, and again, get off the low-income, underserved population bullshit. It's going to be detrimental effects for every single one of us, kind of like Obama deciding that somebody diagnosed with a, quote-unquote, mental illness won't be able to own a firearm, or somebody who's on, somebody who's on the no-fly list, that nobody's seen and apparently is extremely inaccurate, won't be able to own a firearm. Yeah, that type of inaccuracies and biases that would lead to detrimental effects. You know, just wait until they're using cell phone apps to diagnose mental illness. And as they're surveilling everybody's voice conversations, you know, there's going to be a red light at some point in the future. Beep, beep, beep at NSA headquarters. It says, little data going off the rails on this one. Let's make sure we put her on the list to get the extra tests before we provide her, you know, some sort of insurance policy. I don't know. I mean, it's just such an ugly, ugly thing. And people think it's so great because 21st century medicine is going to cure cancer, right? I warned you about that. That's the dangling carrot, the promise to everyone. And I just see mainstream stories one after the other after the other, how freaking amazing all these new advances are and how wonderful the 21st century is going to be for all of us because we could live forever. Well, that living forever is a dangling carrot that you're never going to see. And what it's going to allow them to do is to bag and tag every cell in your body, every protein, every amino acid, use you as a big petri dish experiment and be able to report on whatever you do. I mean, eventually, whatever you think, it's beyond science fiction now. Interestingly, Gartner reports that half of all business ethics violations by 2018 will be caused by improper use of big data analytics. And it suggests the following. Link analytics, business outcomes to blah, 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 blah. Consider alternative approaches. What a lame-ass story this was. So they don't even tie this into any of the personalized crap. They started it out that way, but they did not go down the rabbit hole. At the end, it says the data is amoral. There is no good or bad. It just is. It's the human choices that we make with them that make the difference. Yeah, well, it's the human choices that are made by the collectors of the data. But that took me to this story, which is titled The Internet of, well, I'll tell you in a second. The Internet of Things is about us, emerging forms of innovation in the Internet of Things. And this was sponsored by Deloitte & Touche, which should tell you something. But you know what? Get into bed with the dragon for a little bit to see what he's thinking. The observation that the Internet of Things encompasses people holds a number of transformative business and societal implications. That data and information flow that continually emanates from people and devices can be aggregated and analyzed to create fundamental new types of products and services that go with the grain of human psychology. Yes. That go with the grain of psychology. Like, they can use your data to then come up with ways to dupe you better. The transconfiguration of the commonplace. The protean inventor Nikola Tesla once made a prediction that must have seemed as fanciful to his Victorian contemporaries as the science fiction of the day. He wrote, "When wireless is fully applied, the earth will be converted into a huge brain capable of response in every one of its parts." Well, sorry, Tesla. It happened. It's the spiderwebs in the sky. Today, a century and a digital revolution or two later, there is a sense in which Tesla's global brain is becoming an actuality. Though the internet is often discussed in terms of aspects of the world entering virtual reality, and that's coming as well. Saw my friend post one of the big fights that's coming up here very soon. Again, another dangling carrot for the masses is going to be broadcast simultaneously with VR. So anybody who has VR goggles, and I don't know, I'm sure that you need to have a special brand or whatever, but you can subscribe like you are sitting right next to the ring and watch that fight. I don't know how much stuff like that is going to cost, but the virtual reality, that whole full immersion is coming at the home level here very soon. Though the internet is often discussed in terms of aspects of the world entering quote-unquote virtual reality, an imposing dynamic is increasing at play. The internet is also expanding into the real world thanks to the ability of such inexpensive technologies as wirelessly connected sensors. Yes, biosensing, don't forget. Triggers, actuators, RFID tags, GPS locators, accelerometers, and even printed QR codes. So I guess there's tracking in there now as well. Everyday objects are therefore increasingly becoming components of the emerging entity known as the Internet of Things. Roughly 5 billion of such connected devices are in use in 2015, increasing to tens of billions in just a few years. From smart thermostats in our homes, personal fitness bands on our wrist, observational devices in vehicles, to noise, efficiency, vibration sensors embedded in factory machinery or jet engines, these devices and the insights and predictions emanating from the resulting analytics will quite literally be everywhere. At first blush, an obvious implication is that everyday objects can and will become better. Remember, they started calling them enchanted objects too. More efficient versions of what they already are. And yeah, that's going to apply to humans as well. For example, complex machines such as airplanes, automobiles, agricultural equipment, and power plants can be tagged to emanate streams of data used to monitor and predict the time of failure of critical parts, which allows replacement and repairs to be conducted before breakage or failure. And, you know, good way to put that, because remember we read a story, too, that came out from, I think it might have been one of the DARPA scientists first discussed it, and then we saw it in a couple publications where they use the same terminologies, how they, with this whole Google life science division and the nanobots in your blood and all the stuff they're trying to sell to us now, they will be able to diagnose the human body like a car. So you don't have to wait till it breaks to take it in to get a repair. They'll be able to monitor it and intervene automatically before anything breaks. It says medical cargoes can be monitored for environmental changes and safe transport. Smart streetlights use less energy to illuminate neighborhoods. Yes, and a lot of them have little speakers and cameras in them. And in short, we can make devices even smarter versions of their current selves thanks to the information flow enabled by cheap and widespread smart components and interconnectivity. Yeah, even light bulbs, guys. Those are already rolled out, some of those smart light bulbs that can have cameras and microphones and can transmit Li-Fi. The linking of devices to networks changes the nature of these things in at least two fundamental ways, and soon to be your car. First, data and information long used to achieve efficiencies in creation, marketing, and distribution of things increasingly becomes imbued in the things themselves. For example, t-shirts, eyeglasses, sports equipment, mobile phones, automobiles, fashion accessories can all double as data capturing and information delivery devices. He mentions automobiles, eyeglasses, sports equipment. Yeah, I think your regular glasses will turn into Google Glass someday. Oh, this is horrifying. They increasingly are becoming, they increasingly become media of data products and services. And second, as things become increasingly networked, the network themselves emerges as new classes of products and services. It is now meaningful to speak of smartphones, smart farms, smart cities, thanks to the flow of information enabling improved efficiencies and coordination among linked devices. And this, of course, gives product companies new opportunities to become providers of information and services. The Internet of Things is giving rise to what might be called, quote, transfiguration of the commonplace, unquote, with all of the societal and business model implications that this implies. The nature and functions of everyday things, the networked environments they comprise, will continue to evolve thanks to the infusion of data, information, and network linkages into the basic designs. But what about us? Well, as sweeping as it already is, this device-centric narrative omits a crucial point. Namely, people should also be regarded as a part of the Internet of Things. Ding, ding, ding. The publisher and veteran Internet observer Tim O'Reilly recently made the initially counterintuitive comment that the crowdsourced taxi company Uber exemplifies the types of changes the Internet of Things has in store for business models in society. In this case, taxi drivers and people seeking rides are the Internet of Things connected via their mobile devices. The observation is the Internet of Things encompasses people is deceptively simple, but it holds a number of transformative business and societal implications. First, the data and information flows continually and emanating both from people and everyday devices can be aggregated and analyzed with an algorithm to create fundamentally new types, of products, services, and business models. See, this is like a sales thing. It's all about making money, man. It's all about selling more. And now let's make money off of, like, how many times you fart in a day. It's just so unbelievable. It's beyond invasive. And it says, furthermore, these informational flows can be bi-directional, so look out for that. Multitudes of small signals from thousands of individuals aggregated and analyzed to send personalized data products, recommendations, and services back to these individuals. But second, most of what falls under the term of big data is, in fact, digital breadcrumbs collected by the Internet of Things as we go about our everyday activities. And this Internet of Things collected data is, to the study of people and organizations, what the telescope was to astronomy in Galileo's time. New varieties of data science are coming to prominence in response to this newfound treasure trove. Yeah, like building algorithms to be able to assess mental health capacity based upon your voice patterns. That would be one. New varieties of data science are coming to prominence in response to this newfound treasure trove, going by such names as computational social science, social physics, behavioral analytics, there we go, and people analytics. And these emerging disciplines afford both deeper and broader understandings of human, organizational, and social network behavior. Domains likely to be affected range from human resources to performance management to behavioral health, yeah, ding ding, to employee risk management, and it goes way beyond that. And finally, design thinking. As in behavioral design thinking is important. Past 3 decades have ushered in a behavioral revolution in our understanding of the way people make judgments and decisions. Pre-crime. In the wave of these discoveries, there is an increasing recognition that products and services are considerably more effective when they are designed to go with rather than against the grain of human psychology. And yeah, so, let's talk about like some sort of medical implant. Most people, if you told them we're going to put in an implant so we could put you into the big database and track, slice and dice every bit of you, I bet you wouldn't have a lot of takers. But if we use psychology, turn it into a dangling carrot and told you, hey, if you get this really cool new implant, it's a smart device and it can monitor everything and send the information back to your doctors, you could be fixed long before you break and you might live a really long time and never get cancer. Well, you know what? I bet you'd have super long lines like freaking Black Friday out the door for that one. To paraphrase Ogilvie's Rory Sutherland, Internet of Things connected devices and Internet of Things delivered services should be designed for what? The brains of humans. The Internet of Things is not just about smart devices. It is also about devices and services that help us become smarter. And yeah, add that to live longer as well. I don't know if I want to read about. Do we really want to read about the history of the Internet of Things? Here, let's get beyond that. And we'll take a look at the future. All right. Making the invisible visible. The premise that the Internet of Things encompasses people has an important implication for the notion of big data. Most of the data collected by the Internet of Things are, in fact, human behavioral data, often collected continually and at vast scales. These new sources of data enable new forms of analytics, such as people analytics, social network analytics, behavioral health, and precision medicine, ding, and behavioral finance as well. Sandy Pentland of MIT comments, quote, "The power of big data is that it is information about people's behavior instead of information about their beliefs. It is the behavior of customers, employees, and prospects for your new business, but it is not about the things you post on Facebook, and it is not about your Google searches." No, because it's already in the database. This is going to add on to that. Which is what most people think about. It is not the data from internal company processes and RFIDs. This sort of big data comes from things like the location data off your cell phone or your credit card. This is the little data breadcrumbs that you leave behind as you move around the world, right? And allows them to track everything you do. And using large volumes of behavioral data to better understand the workings of groups and networks is the domain of an emerging interdisciplinary field known as computational social science. the medical professor and computational social scientist Nicholas Christakis summarizes the perspective that motivates much of the research. If you would ask social scientists even 20 years ago what powers they dreamed of having, oh no, we're talking about superpowers again, they would have said, quote, it would be unbelievable if we could have this little tiny Black Hawk helicopter, oh no, that could be microscopic, fly on top of you, and monitor where you are, who you're talking to, what you're buying, what you're thinking, and if you could do this in real time all the time for millions of people all at the same time, if we could collect all that data, it would be amazing, unquote. Oh my God. Well, hey, guess what, guys? We do have little mini Black Hawk helicopters that we can't even see. Flying around in our cell phones. It's just sick. Christakis' point is that the Internet of Things makes yesterday's data science fiction today's data science. And a study by Cornell sociologists Scott Golder and Michael Macy illustrates the possibilities for understanding people and populations in new ways. Golder and Macy analyzed millions of publicly available Twitter messages and were able to measure and quantify the degree to which people awaken in a good mood, which subsequently deteriorates throughout the day. Well, that's easy. That happens every day to me. And the degree to which the happiness of populations is correlated with the varying lengths of daylight. Well, that's a no-brainer. And of course, these findings are intuitive, but the point is that such population-level traits and behaviors are now subject to scientific scrutiny by means other than surveys. Yes, it's called an algorithm. Wow, they're really dumbing this down and trying to make it sound like it's great for business. Similar methods are also used in the business world. For example, analysis of social media is routinely used to measure changes in public sentiment. And you know, this whole social science, computational social science, is a lot of what Kurzweil's been working on. This is being able to scrape unformatted text and gain not only what's being said in words, but also in colloquialisms, and whether or not there's a danger or a threat, whether or not there's anger involved, if there's some emotions, what the context of words mean based upon others. And then to be able to gain some sort of intelligence out of it was the first step of the artificial intelligence project that is way now beyond that. I'm going to sneeze. Oh, whoa, that was a good one. Chris Stocks and Fowler, for instance, have concluded that obesity is, quote unquote, contagious in social networks. Otherwise, similar people are more likely to become obese if they themselves enter a social situation in which they are surrounded by obese people. And you know, there was a story that we never got to about a week or two ago about mental illness being contagious as well. And it was based on the same concepts that if you are around self-radicalized individuals who are spewing things that they claim to be truth because they've done research and not the spewing that's being done by mainstream, you will be quote unquote infected by those self-radicalized people. Similar effects have been posited for teen pregnancy and smoking, and that is true. And such insights are useful in the design of environments to prompt healthier behaviors. And trust me, that healthy behavior and turning you into a 21st century medicine, precision medicine guinea pig is what this is all about, all in the name of climate change, keeping costs down and everything else. One promising application of these social science methods in the business world are only beginning to attain prominence. Human resources is a domain that has been notoriously slow to adopt data analytics. Hiring, evaluation, promotion, and coaching decisions are now largely based on subjective judgments. But now that it is increasingly possible to collect quote-unquote digital breadcrumbs of workers as they go about their daily jobs, data-driven methods might be poised to make inroads against reliance on unaided judgment when making decisions about people and teams. Guys, there will be nothing that we will be able to do driving, thinking, working, speaking, I don't know, sleeping, where we're not being monitored and assessed in some way here in the not-too-distant future. Oh, yeah, and look at, then they follow this up with, well, while such monitoring understandably strikes many as intrusive or quote unquote creepy, I think I call it more than creepy. I call stalkers creepy. This is more than stalking. It is worth considering the shortcomings of the alternative. Oh, you're right. The use of unaided judgments, like the way we've been doing it all of history, to evaluate a job candidate and employee performance is plagued with cognitive biases such as groupthink, halo effects, and the tendency to favor people like oneself and overgeneralizing from easy-to-remember experiences. Yeah, it's called making an impression. The implications of the celebrated book Moneyball is that such biases are so endemic to judgment-based hiring decisions that they can lead to inefficient markets for talent. So, of course, this is going to be good. It'll put everybody's data about the way they do things into an algorithm. So now it can go to your employer with your resume and they can look and they can go, look, oh, Jewel works for 2 minutes and then she's popping on to something else. She can't seem to pay attention long enough to get anything done. Don't know. This just goes on and on. It is reasonable to expect that the Internet of Things mediated behavioral data to provide new perspectives, such as sociometric data. Data about who is emailing whom and other data sources that can then be combined to create organizational social network graphs. And while our discussion is focused on the potential of people analytics for reinventing various functions, behavioral digital exhaust and computational science methods will continue to leave their mark on a variety of domains. All right, well, you know what? We, it's Friday. And don't give it up, people. Don't give it up. What's the end? Let's scroll to the bottom because time is up. Time is up. Who owns the data? Nobody owns the data. And that's not going to work in your benefit. Don't give it up. Don't go to 23andMe. Don't answer any type of surveys. Don't get it on your phone. Don't give them a DNA sample. All right, guys. Well, make sure you have an awesome Friday and weekend. I got all the shows to cut for this weekend, but it is Friday, so Ms. Lonnie Clark is coming up next. We got tonight Josh Live at 6, Primer Time, the boys at 8 from this week, Truth on the Tracks at 9, Cutting Through the Matrix at 10, and Intimidating with Levon at 11. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend, and I will catch up with you on Monday.